I still remember the sun spilling through the windows as I straightened the guest room, folding the last of the freshly washed sheets. My hands were trembling slightly, a mixture of excitement and nerves. Today was the day. My first foster child was arriving. I stared at my reflection in the hallway mirror, brushing down my shirt. My mother would have been so proud of me for taking in a child in need. After she passed, I felt lost, alone, but helping a child was supposed to be healing, right? When the knock came, I exhaled sharply and opened the door. Ronnie Bateman stood on the porch, holding a tattered plush bear with a missing eye. He was smaller than I expected for a 10-year-old, pale and thin, with unkempt brown hair falling over his eyes. The social worker introduced us, but Ronnie never spoke a word. He simply stared at me with unsettling stillness. The moment the door shut behind us, he finally spoke.
"You have pretty hair," he said softly, his voice barely above a whisper.
It should have been a sweet compliment, but the way he smiled afterward made me feel strangely cold. I made grilled cheese sandwiches for lunch, something simple that most kids would enjoy. Ronnie didn't touch his food. Instead, he stared at me, unblinking, dragging his knife across his plate slowly, making a faint scraping sound that set my teeth on edge.
"Not hungry?"
I asked, forcing a warm smile. Without a word, he suddenly shoved his plate onto the floor, sending shards of ceramic and crumbs skittering across the tiles. He glared at me with a flash of something dark in his eyes.
"I don't want this," he muttered coldly.
I knelt beside him, trying to keep calm.
"Hey, it's okay. You don't have to eat it. What do you want to do?"
His lips curled into a grin, a slow, deliberate smile that didn't reach his eyes.
"Let's play hide and seek."
Thinking it would lighten the mood, I agreed.
"Okay, I'll hide first,"
I said, masking my unease. I tiptoed through the house and slipped into the hallway closet, grinning slightly at the stillness of it all. For a moment, it felt almost normal, but as I pressed my ear to the door, I heard something that sent a chill through me. Soft, deliberate footsteps, but there was something else, the faint metallic scrape of a blade dragging across the wall.
"Caroline!"
His voice sing-songed through the house.
"I'm gonna find you."
I held my breath, willing myself to believe I was imagining it. But when I peeked through the narrow crack of the door, my stomach turned to ice. Ronnie was holding a large kitchen knife. His small hands clutched the handle tightly, his knuckles white.
Come out, wherever you are,"
he crooned softly, dragging the tip of the knife along the hallway wall, leaving shallow scratches. I slowly pressed the closet door open, creeping out barefoot, careful not to make a sound. My heart slammed against my chest as I moved down the hallway toward the back door. Suddenly, a tiny hand grabbed my wrist from behind. I spun around, and Ronnie's face was inches from mine, his grin wide, his teeth bared in a grotesque, almost animalistic snarl.
"Gotcha!"
he giggled and slashed at me. The blade missed my stomach by mere inches, but it tore through my shirt, grazing my skin. I gasped in pain and sprinted into the kitchen. My bare feet skidded across the floor as I yanked open drawers, searching for something, anything I could use. But Ronnie was fast, too fast. He came barreling around the corner, slamming into me with surprising force, knocking me into the counter. The knife sliced into my shoulder, making me cry out.
"You're not fast enough,"
he sneered, his eyes wild. I stumbled backward, gripping my bleeding shoulder. My hands shook as I grabbed the heavy ceramic fruit bowl from the counter and swung it at him. It smashed against his arm, making him drop the knife. But instead of crying out in pain, he laughed.
"You're fun,"
he whispered, blood trickling down his arm.
"Wanna play again?"
I bolted for the front door, but he was right behind me, his small footsteps slamming against the hardwood floor. I yanked the door open, only for him to slam it shut with shocking strength, nearly crushing my hand.
"No leaving,"
he hissed, his face only inches from mine. Desperate, I shoved him back and sprinted toward the laundry room. I barely managed to slam the door shut and lock it. I panted against the wall,
my heart threatening to explode out of my chest. Through the crack in the door, I could see his small, bloodied hand running over the handle.
"You can't hide forever," he whispered.
I frantically dialed 911 with my blood-slicked fingers, barely able to speak.
"Please, my foster son, he's trying to kill me."
But before I could give them my full address, the door burst open. Ronnie stood there, his face blank, emotionless. He cocked his head slowly and strolled toward me. I scrambled backward, throwing whatever I could at him. A detergent bottle, towels, anything. He lunged on top of me, his small hands shockingly strong, pinning me to the floor. He raised the knife high above his head, his eyes alight with something vile. I screamed in desperation.
"You don't have to be like your father."
But he simply smiled.
"I'm not like my father," he whispered,
his lips curling into a sinister grin.
"He didn't kill anyone."
I froze, my breath caught in my throat.
"I did,"
he sneered. Every time he brought home a woman after Mom died, I didn't like them. So I played with them, with knives. He only confessed so they wouldn't take me away. His eyes glimmered with triumph, feeding on my horror. He swung the knife downward. I twisted my body just in time, the blade barely missing my throat, instead slicing into the floorboards. I kicked him hard in the chest, sending him flying backward. His head slammed against the wall, but he scrambled back to his feet, giggling.
"You're good at this,"
he taunted. Blood poured from my shoulder, and my limbs trembled from exhaustion. But I managed to grab a broken lamp base and swung it. It cracked against his skull, sending him crumpling to the floor. I stumbled to my feet, my vision swimming, and kicked the knife away from his hand. I sprinted to the front door just as the police arrived. The officers tackled Ronnie to the ground. He didn't struggle. He simply smirked at me from the back of the squad car, his eyes wide with glee.
"See you soon, Caroline,"
he whispered, lips curling into a grin.
"You're my favorite playmate till now."
The paramedics wrapped my bleeding shoulder, but I barely noticed the pain. I stared into the distance, the weight of the horrifying truth sinking in. The wrong man was going to die for the murders, and somewhere deep down, I knew Ronnie would find another game to play. Lily and I have stayed at this foster care for only a week. Our parents, the old Martin, were leaving for dinner, leaving us home alone. When their tires rolled out, Lily jumped on the couch with a tub of popcorn to watch the TV. The house was quiet, except for the faint hum of the TV. Around 20 minutes later, Lily was half asleep on the couch. I was scrolling through my phone when the lights flickered off.
"Huh?"
I frowned. The TV screen was black, except that nothing was on. Total silence. "Lily?" I called as I stood up. She stirred.
"What the hell?"
she said groggily. Then I heard it. A faint click from down the hallway. The front door creaked open. I froze. My stomach twisted inside me. For a second, I wanted to believe the Martins had come back early. But then I heard the heavy footsteps. Not slow, heavy steps or familiar. No, heavy boots. Lily shot upright, her eyes wide open all of a sudden. I looked through the curtain. Two men, masks, crowbars, duffel bags, all slipping inside. I saw one of them twist a screwdriver roughly in the lock until the doorframe cracked. Lily grabbed my arm, whispering,
"Max, we need to hide."
We sprinted down the hallway.
"In here,"
Lily hissed, yanking me into the coat closet. I could barely breathe. My heart was hammering in my chest so loudly, I was sure they'd hear it. We crouched low, huddled beneath a pile of jackets, trying to stay as still as possible. From outside, I could hear them moving through the house, shattering glass, tossing furniture.
"Grab the silverware,"
one of them muttered.
"Find the safe,"
the other growled. Lily's fingers dug into my arm, her knuckles white. And then, my phone buzzed, a stupid spam notification. I fumbled to silence it, but it was too late. The footsteps stopped.
"You hear that?"
one of the men whispered.
Yeah, closet.
I felt Lily's entire body tense against mine. My stomach turned cold. The door creaked open slowly, and for a brief, horrifying moment, my eyes met one of the robber's eyes. He grinned.
Gotcha!
Before he could grab us, Lily yanked me out of the closet. We tore down the hallway. The robber's heavy footsteps thudded behind us, closing in fast.
Faster, Max!
Lily screamed, pulling me toward the stairs. We scrambled to the second floor and slammed a bedroom door shut behind us. Lily shoved the dresser against the door, her hands trembling violently. I remained there, gasping with my heart pounding in my ears.
We need to get out! The window!
I shouted, but before we could even move, the other guy kicked the door down. The dresser screeched as it moved across the floor, but it didn't stop him.
Where do you think you're going?
He laughed, eyes wide with excitement. We ran for the attic, with Lily shoving me ahead of her. I grabbed the shaky ladder and climbed with my hands shaking while my feet slipped off the wood. She pulled the ladder up behind us, leaving the robbers under us.
You can't hide forever, kids,
one of them said, with a sick amusement in his tone.
We have all night.
The attic itself was dark and so hot I was soaking wet with sweat, my hands slippery with fear. Lily's breath was short again, and her skinny arms were trembling.
What do we do?
I hissed in a whisper.
The vent!
She panted and motioned to the small, bent, rusty grate in the corner of the attic. She pulled open the grate with only her hands and bled a little from the jagged edges.
Go, Max!
She urged, shoving me inside. I crawled into the metal shaft, my knees scraping against the rusty surface. My chest felt tight. It was too narrow, claustrophobic. But I kept moving. Lily squeezed in behind me, her breath hot against my back. From below, I heard them discuss.
We need to find another way up.
The vent led us to the garage crawl space. We dropped down with a thud, hitting the cold concrete floor. My knees burned from the fall. Lily grabbed my hand, trying to pull me toward the side door. But suddenly, one robber was there, waiting.
Smart kids!
He sneered, his eyes glinting cruelly. He lunged at Lily, grabbing her wrist. Without thinking, I snatched a rusty screwdriver from the workbench and plunged it into his thigh. He screamed in pain, stumbling backward.
Run!
Lily shouted. We bolted for the garage door, but his partner appeared, blocking the exit. He had a crowbar in his hand, swinging it slowly back and forth.
Going somewhere?
He hissed. Desperate, Lily grabbed a bottle of turpentine from the shelf and hurled it at his face. It splattered across his eyes, making him howl in agony, clawing at his face. Just when we thought we were free, he tackled Lily, slamming her against the concrete floor. She screamed as he held her down, his hand resting on her mouth. I saw the wounded guy limping toward me in rage. There was a heavy garage door handle, and I smashed it down on his arm as he tried to grab me. He screamed, and his bones cracked under the weight of the door. I turned just in time to see Lily, her face and chest covered in blood, sink her teeth into her attacker's hand. He roared in pain and loosened his grip just enough for her to shove him backward. The sound of sirens broke the night. It was sound of cop cars. We run out screaming for help. The neighbors heard screams from our house, so called the cops. The cops tackled the robber down onto the ground. Lily and I settled into the back of an ambulance, trembling under silver-thin blankets. My hands won't stop shaking.
You saved me, Max.
She whispered. I shook my head, still gasping for breath.
No, you saved me.
I squatted on the carpet, its fibers worn and frayed between my fingers, picked at the edges. A faint scent of pine-scented cleaner and old wood permeated the air, a huge change from the thick dampness that greeted me at the group home just a week ago. I'd only been with Roy, a middle-aged foster father with soft eyes and a friendly smile, for 5 days. At first, I felt thankful. He brought me some new clothes, allowed me to choose my own meals, and even said that I didn't have to have a fixed bedtime. Everything felt safe. Still, I'd been in foster care long enough to tell when things didn't feel quite right. It started with the rules.
You want to keep the basement door locked all the time. It's just storage. Nothing there you want, he said. You can't use the landline. It's not working. So if you need to call someone, just let me know.
The landline thing was odd, but I didn't ask any questions. Until tonight. The moment Roy left the house at 8 p.m., I heard it. Thud. A heavy, dull bang from somewhere down the hall. I ripped the earbuds from my ears and sat up, straining to listen. Bang. Bang. It was coming from the locked hallway closet, the one Roy was always locking. I hesitantly approached the door, my palms sweaty. I pressed my ear to the door and listened closely. Soft, uneven breaths. Shallow. Desperate. My heart skipped a beat. I tried the handle. It was locked, of course. But I wasn't a rookie at this. I had run away from enough foster homes to know a thing or two. I pulled out a bobby pin from my pocket. My hands were shaking, but I jigged it into the lock. My hands were sweaty, making it difficult to keep a steady hand. A couple of shaky attempts later, I felt the lock click. Slowly, I pulled the door open, super slowly, until my stomach dropped. Huddled in the corner was a young girl, no older than 10, with matted brown hair and filthy pajamas. Her wrists were raw from the shackles clamped around them, her wide, terrified eyes locked onto mine.
Please, help me,
she whispered, her voice hoarse and cracked. For half a second, I just stood there, my brain frozen.
What? What the hell?
I choked out. I knelt down, fumbling with the shackles. Her small arms were trembling, sticky with blood and grime. She clung to me with what little strength she had left. But before I could even breathe, I heard it, the click of the front door unlocking. Roy was back. I slammed the closet shut, but I wasn't fast enough. The door creaked open. Our eyes met across the hallway. For the first time, I saw the kindness drain from his face, replaced by a cold, calculating fury.
What are you doing?
His voice was low and measured, but I could hear the edge of it. I took a step back, pulling the girl behind me.
You lied!
I stammered, my voice cracking with fear. He sprang into action. His hand covered my mouth and jerked me backward. The girl screamed, an awful shrill wail that pierced my ears. I kicked and flailed, but Roy had more strength. He dragged me down toward the basement, his nails digging into my arm. I thrashed. I bit down on his hand, tasting blood. He let out an enraged snarl, but didn't lose his grip. He tossed me back against the basement stairs, and briefly, everything was a blur. I saw stars circling my head as it made contact with the wood. A girl was sobbing from the hallway, the sound raw and terrible.
Please, please, don't leave me,
she cried. Roy grabbed a coil of rope from the corner, his face twisted with rage.
You shouldn't have opened that door, Clara,
he growled, his voice eerily calm. I thrashed and kicked. My fingernails dug into his face, leaving red welts.
You're not taking me down here!
I screamed. He shoved me against the cement floor, pinning me by my shoulders. His hand wrapped around my throat, squeezing. My lungs burned, my vision tunneling. Desperate, I scrambled blindly for anything. My hand found the broken glass from a fallen jar. Without thinking, I plunged it into his thigh. Roy let out a strangled yell, his grip loosening. I scrambled to my feet, blood splattered on my hands. He lunged again, but I kicked his wounded leg. He staggered, cursing, his face twisted in pain. I ran. I grabbed the girl's hand and sprinted toward the front door. My legs ached, my lungs burned, but I didn't stop. Roy's footsteps thudded behind us.
Get back here!
He roared. I threw the front door open and pushed the girl out. My fingers struggled to lock it. The girl has already started screaming, attracting the neighbors. Within a few minutes, three men rushed into the house and pinned down Roy on the floor. I was finally free from his claws. The cops came and arrested Roy. The neighbors spoke in our behalf, and the house was searched. Two more girls were found in the house, hidden from plain sight, tied with chains and padlocks. I don't know how successful I'll turn out to be in this life, but I'll always be proud of myself.